So this cabin dude from the Crossing Broad. Seems like a nice enough fella.
He's a nice guy.
If you're sick of shoveling snow and looking at Carson Wentz trade rumors on the internet, then this is a podcast for you. It's always soccer in Philadelphia. On a Tuesday afternoon, the snow has finally stopped. I'm sure it will pick up at some point later this week. I'm sure I will be out there shoveling for the eighth or ninth time this week. But you know what? We don't have to worry about that right now because this is our safe space for soccer talk in the Delaware Valley. I'm Kevin Kincaid, your host on episode number 123. We have a very special guest joining the program today. You've seen her on the Philadelphia Union pregame show, halftime show, Fox Sports, CBS, ESPN. I'm sure there's a bunch of other platforms I'm forgetting, but she can fill me in on the rest. It's Marissa Pilla. What's up, Marissa?
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. Did I get them all there? Did I name them all?
I think you did. Yeah. Yeah. There's just so many. So.
Right. Well, by the time I read through your entire LinkedIn profile, it would be the end of the podcast. And then we would just have to cut it off right there because we'd be at like 30 minutes in.
Yeah.
Welcome. It's good to have you. Long overdue. You know, every time I'm well into the 100s for episodes now. And, you know, I have guests on and I'm sitting here thinking like, why the hell did it take me so long to get this person on the show? So that's where I'm at with that now. And like I told you before the show, you know, there's not really a ton going on with the Union right now. So we're going to do kind of like a potpourri of topics, a cornucopia, if you will, of soccer topics. So, you know, I would just start with something very generic. You were kind of all over the place the last year. You were doing Union stuff. You did the Challenge Cup out in Utah. I mean, I felt like I saw you on every different stream and TV channel where soccer was. I mean, what was the last year like for you?
It was pretty wild. I have to say, like, in addition to everything that everybody else was going through, you know how it was for sports people in 2020. I wasn't sure if I was even going to work. So my first job in 2020 was MLS opening weekend out in Portland. So, I mean, I started off with an incredible environment out there. It was Portland, Minnesota. It was a really great game. I was like, wow, 2020 is my year, man. Then I flew home and the world stopped. But I was really fortunate to have worked as much as I did. So I really only did one Fox game last year. Which seems like 10 years ago at this point, but that's when the NWSL kind of swooped in and was like, I got a call maybe like early June, I want to say late May. And they're like, hey, if we do a tournament in Utah, would you want to cover it? And I was like, yeah, sure. But like at that point, it's like, you don't know what's really going to happen. You don't know. Like, so yeah, I mean, my calendar's open. I am available. So yes. So, and then all of a sudden, like I was, you know, on a plane out to Utah. I stayed in suburban Salt Lake for a month, which was a wild experience. And I was getting tested every 3 days. So between that and the altitude, my nose was just like, just through the ringer. But Challenge Cup was really great. A lot of eyeballs on the NWSL for that month. And then we went into the fall series. And of course, MLS picked back up after their tournament down in Florida. So I have to say, I was happy I was in Utah and not the Florida Heat for a tournament.
Did you have any trepidation just about COVID or the situation in general? Because it seems like a weird, it was funny because the whole COVID season was kind of like risk versus reward. Like it's weird circumstances, but you know, NWSL, I think, benefited from it. The Challenge Cup went well and it was on CBS and whatnot. So the give and take of that, it seems like there was opportunity there if they were willing to take the risk and make sure that they got everything right.
Yeah, I definitely was, because at that point, I mean, we still don't know everything, but we really, I felt like I didn't know exactly what I was going to be, you know, involved in COVID wise. So I remember I got dropped off at the airport and I had a mini panic attack. I'm like, oh my God, there are people here that I don't know. And where have you been? Have you been washing your hands? Are you in a small social circle? Like all these thoughts are running through my head, looking at all these strangers, like they're the enemy. Cause I'm like, oh my God, you have COVID. I just know it. So like, it was definitely tense flying out to Utah for me. Like I was just like trying to stay in my own little bubble. I think I had two masks on at the time, just like washing everything consistently.
Yeah.
But once we were there inside the bubble, we were so regimented. Like the testing was really well organized. You knew if you were coming in contact with someone, one, they had a mask on, and two, they were getting tested. So you kind of had this feeling of trust of like, okay, none of us want to be the reason why this thing blows up. So let's all do our part to, you know, like I didn't go on hikes. I didn't really explore Utah. Like I stayed in my apartment. I got all my food delivered, left at the door. I would walk around the neighborhood, but people were like, oh, you should check out Salt Lake. I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to be thinking that this thing has to fall apart. Like I see the headlines, like reporter infects league with COVID. Like I didn't want to be that person.
So. Well, right. Yeah. Cause you're like the king asshole out of the whole group. Like you don't, nobody wants to be that person, you know?
Right.
And this was like the early, this was like the early days too, where people still weren't really sure about it. You know, like I'd get back from the grocery store and we'd wipe down the doorknob and, you know, I'd put my like hazmat, my borderline hazmat suit in the foyer and we just leave it there for like 2 days, you know, but there was a lot to risk because you guys were out there relatively early in the pandemic.
Yeah. We were there, pretty much all of July. So I left late June. And I came back late July. So we were there, like that was kind of my summer. And it was weird because I know a lot of Utah wasn't as strict as Philly was. Like walking around Philly, even if I'm walking my dog and I don't have a mask on, people are looking at me like, asshole, like put a mask on. So like I got that ingrained in my head of like, you know, it's also like common courtesy. But out in Utah, it was very different. Like you'd see people, like I was trying to go to Rita's Water Ice one day because there was one out there and I thought it was salvation for just a hot second.
They had a Rita's in Utah?
There was a Rita's in Utah, but I didn't even go because there were people there without masks on and I was just so scared.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just hard to kind of balance having to be hyper, hyper focused with work, those double header days back to back, like you're zoned in. And then trying to relax when you're like, oh, there's a global pandemic going on. So it's just a lot of layers.
Yeah. You know, this isn't a question that I had written down. I'm just kind of winging it here. We're just kind of having a freestyle conversation. But you know, it's interesting because now we're going back to, you know, MLS is going to start up soon. I'm not sure what the NWSL situation is. I haven't really been keeping up with that too much. But just in generally speaking, you know, Adam Silver came out and he said he thought it would be good for basketball players to get the vaccine and kind of double it as like a PSA of sorts, you know, and then it'll encourage people to feel good about the vaccine and go out in the community and do it. I was originally against that idea because I'm like, I can't have an athlete get the vaccine before like a teacher or a healthcare worker or something like that. But now I've kind of like amended my take on that situation a little bit because I'm looking at how we're just kind of scattered and getting it out in general. I'm sitting here thinking, well, I mean, if they could all get it and it gives people entertainment and the athletes are safe and they're doing all the traveling, like I kind of don't see a problem with it now. But my take has changed from what it originally was. I'm just kind of curious as to what you think about it.
I think that's really interesting because I was actually thinking about that today. That's so funny you brought it up. I was like, I wonder if athletes are going to get preferential treatment in this, because we've already seen that with the rapid tests that the leagues are able to get for their players, where they're literally coming back. And I got one done and it was bizarre. It was done I got my results in less than 15 minutes, where I know some people, one, still can't find tests, two, they're waiting 3 weeks to hear back. And at that point it's like, well, I'm not dead, so I guess I didn't have it. And so we've already kind of seen the discrepancies of what athletes have, you know, access to, but we all know that that's part of the game. But I kind of agree. I think it might be good for people to see athletes who, one, take their bodies and health very, very seriously, trust the vaccine. And I think that would speak volumes as like, okay, here's someone that I admire for, you know, what they're able to do and the entertainment they're able to provide and how they take care of their body. And they trust this. They're willing to put this into their body because I think, you know, societally wise, we've been doubting science for way too long, which drives me crazy. So I think you make a good point there that it could be good kind of as a PSA. And two, I think this year really proved how important sports are, because we always kind of see it as a luxury, as maybe even at times something frivolous. But then when they were taken away, for even myself, I'm like, wow, I work in such an an exciting field, and it's not, you know, I'm not curing cancer, I'm talking about soccer, but when it was removed from our society and as something that, you know, we use as an escape or just to feel happy or to feel excited or passionate about, yeah, it was taken away, you realized how important it really was. So yeah, I think it would be good if athletes were able to get the vaccine. And because we've seen some older athletes like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was like putting it out that he had gotten the vaccine, and
yeah,
and showing older Americans, you know, to trust it too. But I think the young current athletes right now could be really positive.
Let me just hit on a couple of Philadelphia Union topics real quick, because it is a Union podcast after all. There's really not a lot going on because, you know, they had the labor dispute and obviously you weren't sure when the season was going to start. So there haven't really been any signings announced and whatnot. I have a very brief thought on the labor dispute. People asked about it on the last podcast. I said, well, they'll probably get it done. They always get it done. That's the extent of my thought on it. Do you have any thoughts of your own that you'd like to add?
Mine's just kind of like, thank God. You know, there's already so many unknowns right now. Just in general with life, that it's just like, can we just have MLS starting when they said they're going to start?
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of a breath, like a relief when those tweets were coming in that like, it was signed, like it was done. So
yeah, and I'm not insensitive to either side's wants or needs, you know, but you know, to me, like the negotiating through the media and seeing the various statements and stuff like that just kind of rings hollow, especially at a point where people are just trying to put food on the table and they're just trying to get through their daily lives in a pandemic. It's like, well, could you guys just kind of get it done and let me know when you get it done? So that was my take. The new Union jerseys, do you like them or do you hate them?
I love them. I really do. I'm so tired of streamlined, polished soccer jerseys. I miss like the ragtag, like bizarre eyesore jerseys from the early 90s that were just like
1996, the first year of MLS with the crazy stripes and the color schemes.
Yeah,
and all.
Like give me like clashing colors, give me like weird patterns. I think that's what kind of makes soccer interesting when it comes to other sports. You know, so many other, you know, you look at the NFL and those franchises have been set for so long, or baseball especially, and certain things are classic. It's like soccer is global. It's eclectic. It's fun. It's young and it's old at the same time. And I love that they went with something different. I love the color scheme. I love the pattern. I'm just glad it's not white.
Yes.
I'm glad it doesn't have just the middle stripe down center.
Enough plain white. I know there's enough plain white. Yeah. Yeah.
Show some and creativity.
This is me speaking as somebody who's partially colorblind. You know, I appreciate plain for practical purposes as much as anybody. I don't know how many times I've complained about like the Union's dark blue versus the Chicago Fire's red. And I can't see jack shit from the press box, but I don't have to worry about that anymore now. But yeah, it's creative. You know, it's like, why the hell not? You know, I used to like sit here and think, like, I used to be like a media curmudgeon where it's like, oh, I don't care what they wear, I just play the game, you know, whatever. But like, it gets fans excited, they're interested in it. I don't see why not. What is there anything, God, I mean, I don't even really know where to start with the Union. If I just said to you like Philadelphia Union 2021, like coming off a season when they won the Supporters Shield, sold Brendan Aaronson, sold Mark McKenzie, like kind of like what's on your mind for this season? Like what are the storylines that you're thinking of, or what are you kind of interested in seeing when this season starts?
I think for me, it's all about, okay, well now what are you going to do? What's next? Where do you take it from here? And do you have the pieces? Because at least from when I started, which was 5 years ago, every year the team got incrementally better, just a little bit better. Maybe they made the playoffs. Okay. But they like barely got in. Okay. Next year they get in the playoffs and they're not getting in just on goal differential. And then the next year and the next year, and they were hosting a playoff game last year. And then they were the top seed this year. And we all know how that went out. But every year there was a little something. And I think this year, that jump has to be much bigger. The increment has to be much bigger than what we've seen in years past, because now there's no longer the expectation of like, oh, they're the struggling team that doesn't have like the big budget. Like, no, you've been proving for the last several years that you can get this done with the players that you have and the salaries that you're paying them.
Yeah.
So what's going to be the big thing? Who's going to fill in for Brendan Aaronson? What's going to happen with the back line and Mark McKenzie not being there? Yeah, I think we're just going to see. I mean, Paxton Aaronson is super interesting to me. I know he is for a lot of people, but what's going to happen? How is he going to get used, if at all? Anthony Fontana, I've said before, is a name that I think we're going to see more and more of. He's gotten a lot stronger. I heard a lot more confident. So, and then Jim Curtin coming off Coach of the Year, which I thought was really exciting, and how he kind of builds off of that. So it's all kind of, to me, just like, well, what are you going to do with the success? You had it, you tasted it. Now what? What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, like what's the next level, right? Like what's the next step? Yeah.
Because I think they were always exceeding people's expectations of them for so long, but now finally expectations have caught up to them. Okay, well, this is the baseline of what we expect of you. Now, how can you raise that level?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I would agree with all that. I'm curious. And I think it's on me partially to accept the fact that, you know, they're not going to be a team that goes out and makes the foreign signing in the winter. Because this is normally the time every year where there's like the Vince Noguera or the Chaco Maidana or like the Harris Madunian in his announce or something. I got to like make peace with myself, understanding that that's probably not coming. And you're excited for Paxton Aaronson. You're excited for all these academy guys. But, you know, those press releases don't move the needle in the same way that like a Fernando Aristeguieta would necessarily. So we kind of have to adjust our thinking as Union fans and just accept that this is the way it's going to have to be. And the way that it is right now is currently resulting in the best Union team we've ever seen. Right. So it's on us to kind of get over the hump. I want to talk a lot about NWSL and the women's game, because we don't talk about it a lot on this podcast, but I want to do a quick exercise. Before we do that, we always like to do an exercise on the podcast. And today's exercise is we're going to take the World Cup cities and narrow them down to the 10.
Oh, I already have a list of 16.
Do you? Oh, my. Look at this. I wish I could show people. Yeah, she has a notepad that she just held up on the screen. And by the way,
my top six.
By the way, just so people are aware, I was having technical difficulties earlier. So Marissa is looking at me through my phone. I'm looking at her on my desktop because my laptop was going through like a 2-hour Windows update. So I keep looking at the wrong thing. I have to look at her down here. I keep looking at my other screen. I'm like a bozo. She's looking at me from the side. But anyway, so I guess the final list of you know, American cities was announced for World Cup 2026. We already know that it's going to be 3 in Canada and 3 in Mexico, and those have already been selected and narrowed down. So it's Edmonton, Montreal, Toronto, and then in Mexico, it's going to be Mexico City, Monterrey, and Guadalajara. So we have the final list of American cities, and that's going to have to be narrowed down to 10. So I will read the list here. The list is Philadelphia, Nashville, Los Angeles, New York, Atlanta, Baltimore, Boston, Cincinnati, Dallas, Denver, Houston, Kansas City, Miami, Orlando, San Francisco, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. Marissa, you go first and you give me your list.
Okay. Well, Philly, obviously.
Yes.
Because, you know, I don't need to explain that.
Right,
I really love Baltimore. I think I lived in Baltimore for a couple years. It is such a cool city.
Well, you're a Terrapin too, aren't you?
I am a Terp.
Yeah.
It's a really cool city. Especially being right on the water, it's different. I think for World Cup fans, it's maybe a city, because there's going to be people coming here from all over the world. It's a city not a lot of people visit, but I think once you're there, you really enjoy Nashville, for selfish reasons, because I want to go. Atlanta, I think you have to see that stadium. That stadium's great.
Yeah.
Miami, I'll say this right now, not Orlando. I don't care what other city. No offense to Orlando or Houston, No.
Be like 40 million degrees in summer.
Yeah. I was in Houston for a game one time in July, and I thought I was going to melt into a puddle. And I don't know how these people were running around playing soccer, because I was holding a microphone and I like lost 10 pounds in water weight.
Yeah. I used to live in Georgia and like it was 90 bazillion degrees in the summer. And this was before I was wearing flip flops. I was still like a hard ass heavy metal kid. And I'm like, I don't wear flip flops. You know, so I'd be walking around with like black shoes and black socks. It was like 100 degrees. So
yeah,
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. No Houston, no Orlando, but Seattle, I think you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
LA, because people love it out there. I like Denver. And I think I'm going to go Boston.
Okay.
No New York. I think New York's tired.
I would agree 100% with that. And, you know, it's interesting because your list kind of looks like my list, and mine is just kind of done on the principle of I don't want any city that hosted in 1994 to host this time around. And I know that sounds petty.
Yeah.
Well, no, I know it does sound petty. It sounds vindictive, but I'm sitting here thinking like, look, if you were, let's say you were 30 years old in 1994, right? And you went to the Silver Dome in Detroit to see Team A versus Team B, right? Well, in the 26 years, probably now you're what, 56 years old, or 57, I guess. Should you be able to see a game in the same place? Like, I feel like it's recent enough that you could justify just taking all of the previous cities up there. So look, I went through the list and I crossed off all the ones that hosted it last time. So LA had it last time. New York had it last time. Boston hosted it last time. Dallas, Orlando actually at the Citrus Bowl hosted, and San Francisco and DC. So if you take those out of there, that's actually six, believe it or not. So if you take all those out of there and just did it based on who hasn't had a chance yet, you'd have Philly, Nashville, Atlanta, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Denver, Houston, Kansas City, Miami, and Seattle.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a bad list, right?
Kansas City is a great soccer town too.
It's a huge, town. It's not, is it sacrilegious for me to think that we would have a World Cup here without LA or New York hosting? It'd be like Japan hosting, but not having anything in Tokyo.
I know. And when you say it like that, it's like, yeah, I guess, but I'm tired of the New York. I'm just tired of it.
Yeah.
Because like NYCFC plays at Yankee Stadium. We're going to have a World Cup at Yankee Stadium. Like,
yeah, right.
My dead body. And then what, you're going to send people to Red Bull Arena in Harrison, New Jersey for a World Cup? Like, come on.
Oh yeah. We don't need the final at like MetLife or something. I would love to see something. I would just like to showcase different cities. So I'm all for equity and fairness.
Yeah. That's how and there's I so see many like the Nashville's, like Kansas City, like smaller cities, but that have been bringing in great soccer. Like, I wish Portland was on the list, to be honest, because I think Portland would have been great.
Yeah, I think so.
But Seattle for sure, I think should be on there just to show the different parts of the country too. Cause I think everybody, you know, I have relatives who live in Italy, and when they think of America, they think of Philadelphia, because that's where I live, New York and LA, and maybe Miami. So to show different areas and to really highlight the different cities we have.
I agree 100%. Okay, so you're heavily involved in the women's game in NWSL. We do not have an NWSL team in Philadelphia. We had the Charge here about 20 years ago. We had the Independence here about 10 years ago. What do you remember? Do you remember much about those teams, or what was your earliest involvement with the women's game here in town?
I definitely remember the Charge. My dad used to bring me to the games at Villanova.
Yeah.
I actually just found my my Charge visor that I bought, and I got it signed by like Heather Mitz. So like, I was the coolest kid in third grade.
They had some good players in that.
They had some really good players.
Yeah, because Hope Solo, a very young Hope Solo. Mm-hmm. Was on that team, and Kelly Smith too.
Yeah,
played
there was
for the
a lot of talented players, and Lori Lindsay played for the Philadelphia Independence.
Yeah,
so I remember the Charge games a lot, because I think for a lot of people my age, the '99 Women's World Cup really kind of set the tone for falling in love even more with the sport and wanting to be more involved in it. So that, and my dad really was great in that fact, where he encouraged that. And he would bring me to games, and he would make me watch games too. So just to have that and have that visibility to see players playing who looked like me, I think was really important. But I think an NWSL team could do well here. I really think they could. There's such a good, passionate soccer base here to begin with. Not only that, but what happens a lot in NWSL, especially in the draft in later rounds, is teams start taking athletes who are local, who maybe grew up in that area, who maybe went to college in that area. So you take them maybe in the third or fourth round, because you know they'll have a support system around them, even if they don't make this team. And Philly and the Delaware Valley and New Jersey, all of that, they really have, there's so much talent that comes out of here, not just from colleges, but there's great high school teams, there's great youth teams in this area. I know you know that. So to have that pool where it's kind of a connection-based thing too, and then just have Carly Lloyd come home and be captain coach. And
yeah. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this way then. I'm going to ask you a fill in the blanks question. I don't think I've ever asked anybody a fill in the blanks question on this podcast before in like 122 episodes. In order for NWSL to successfully come to Philadelphia, blank.
They need to have the right ownership. And we've been seeing a lot of really big names come into the ownership world for women's soccer. And I think that speaks a lot of volumes to players. If they see that the ownership is super, super invested really in this team succeeding and being very open to hearing what the team needs, that is something that makes the team really attractive. When players know that they could say, hey, like something as little as like, you know, the water pressure is not great, to something as big as culture or something. If their voices are being heard and they have ownership that's there face to face, not just kind of behind the screen or scene or whatever, that's when I think it makes it attractive, because with NWSL, you need to make your cities attractive and want people want to play them in them, especially with expansion drafts and things like that. So I think it needs strong ownership and a really great coach that can kind of pull people in.
I agree with that 100%. And what I would say is that that ownership kind of needs to be not independent, but they kind of have to, they kind of have to prioritize the team in a way where, you know, I hear a lot of people say, well, why can't a women's team just play at Subaru Park? And why can't the union ownership be involved? Or why can't they have like a women's team on the side or something? And my feeling with that is I know it works in some places, you know, Portland, I would say, right? But we're not Portland. And that's kind of a special crowd up there. But it can't just be like, here's our women's team. They play here, you know, on Sundays after the men's team plays on Saturday. And, you know, people would be unhappy with like the split in resources, because union fans would say, well, why are we budgeting for a women's team when we could go out and get DPs? And then fans of the women's team would say, well, how can we split resources with the men's team? Because it doesn't really serve. I don't know if it serves either team the best way. You know what I mean? So in my thought, it's kind of got to be like independent and their own thing, and they have to be committed to it. It can't just be like a little side investment or a side project. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And I think too, you don't want anyone to feel inferior of that, like they're not, you know, seen as the money maker or whatever. But yeah, Portland is kind of the outlier with that, because both their men's and women's teams are just, they're run really well. I mean, the crowds they get for women's games are insane. I wish that was the norm for everybody across the league, but I think we're getting there. But I think that's a good point. I would like to see it operate on its own, just exist like on its own without kind of having to be like the sister team of somebody.
Mm-hmm. So last one for you. Where would you put the stadium, or where would you have the team play? Because the Independents were a good team and they had a good coach.
Yeah,
and they good players. And that team was damn good. I mean, you had Amy Rodriguez and Natasha Kai and Joe Lohman and Leanne Sanderson, all these great players. And I mean, you know, WPS had its own problems. It wasn't necessarily just an independent specific thing, but I feel like you got to nail the location in the stadium, don't you?
I think for sure. I hesitate to say like the link, because I know how much people hate playing on turf, and like I've seen it, you've seen it, like it's not fun for a lot of these players.
Yeah.
And it's tough. I don't know where I would put it. I, to be honest, I don't think they should play in Chester if they ever do come here.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really,
but it's hard enough to see. Here's the thing, like, cause I see a lot of the challenges that soccer faces in this city, not necessarily as being men's problems or women's problems, but just problems with the game, you know, getting to Chester, mass transit down there, 4 for 4 fans who aren't really into the game necessarily. Right. So I see it as kind of like one like major sport, the sport of soccer challenge, where it's not necessarily like WOSO versus the men's game.
No, I agree. Because when you think like, pretend that, you know, Subaru Park doesn't exist, where would you put the Union? You'd obviously want them with all the stadiums downtown. Like, that's one of the biggest appeals of Philly sports, is that they're all right there. But you can't just fit a stadium down there. And for a new NWSL team to buy a new stadium just for that doesn't seem like it could happen.
Yeah.
So I don't know where, and I wouldn't want to just kind of cast them off to a college stadium, because I think they deserve better than that. Like, you see some stadiums around the country, yeah, and, you know, they deserve a little bit better. I don't know. I mean, but when I say that, like, Penn is in the city, at least it's in the city. It's not, you know, outside of the town, but it's tough. I mean, some NWSL teams have really great stadiums. I know Washington Spirit splits their time between Audi Field, but they also are playing in Loudoun, Virginia, which is like a very heavy turf, which was awful. It felt like sand. So I don't know where I would put the Philly team, but I would make sure that it had a nice grass field.
I agree. And I think we'll get there eventually. You know, the Independents had like a nice, like 2,000, 3,000 person crowd. I think as the Union continue to get better and the game continues to grow, and again, not just the men's game versus the women's game, but as soccer becomes more acceptable here, I think a women's team would succeed. So I'm pulling for it, you know.
I think they would too, because you see the crowds we get for, you know, national team games whenever they go through. And I know that's, you know, such a big ticket thing, but the passion's there. There's an audience there for sure.
You want to hear something really stupid? Because I added my phone to the Zoom call, it now thinks that we have three people on the Zoom call. So it's telling me that it's going to cut off my recording in a couple minutes.
Oh, okay.
This is so stupid because you get the 40 minutes like free if it's just two of you. But apparently because I put my damn phone on the thing, it's telling me that I only got a couple minutes left. But it's okay because I don't want to keep you forever anyway. You got more important things to do. So where can the people find you? And also, you have a new podcast of your own as well, right?
That's right. I started my own podcast a couple months ago. It's called Pillow Talk. It's on Apple Podcasts. It's on Spotify. I've talked to a lot of cool people, a lot of soccer people like Vlatko Andonovski, Carly Lloyd. But I've also talked to, my recent guest was Brian Westbrook. We talked about Carson Wentz. Who else?
I listened to the one with Colleen Wolf. I was depressed for the first 10 minutes.
Oh, she's amazing.
That was the Doug Peterson firing day.
So. And it was like, I had scheduled her to talk to her that day, and then everything blows up. So I'm like, okay, well, this is what we're talking about, Colleen.
Yeah, right, all right. Yeah, change of plans, right? Yeah,
but she's so great. Boundless energy. So she's awesome. So yeah, it's kind of just me taking an opportunity to have longer conversations with people that I don't always get to have on my broadcast, because I'm a sideline reporter most of the time. My hits need to be 10 to 15 seconds max. So it's just a cool chance for me to sit down and tell some interesting stories from around the world of sports. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So you can follow along on Instagram, on Twitter, and you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter too. I'm always welcome to more followers.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much. Follow Marissa on her various platforms. You'll see her whenever you turn soccer on your TV. You'll probably see her on there at some point on some channel. And you're probably already following her on Twitter as well, but it's at @Pilla_talk, correct?
Yes.
PILLA. Marissa, thanks for coming on. It was great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm sorry it took 120 something episodes before I got you on here, but we will get everybody on, and we will we always appreciate everybody joining the program. So thank you. We appreciate it.
I had a lot of fun. Thanks.
Excellent. All right. All right. Well, let's see what you have for me in questions, comments, and concerns. We're going to start off with Michael Y here. He says, without replacing the creativity that Brendan Aaronson brought to the offense and the stability and recoverability that McKenzie brought to the defense, do the Union dig themselves into a hole early that makes it difficult to recover from? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I think we're all underwhelmed as we sit here on February 9th, wondering what's going on with the roster and if they're going to make any moves or what's coming down the pike here. But look, I mean, in a
at surface level, at face value, a team of Santos, Shabilko, Fontana, Jamiro, Brujo, Bedoya, Wagner, Glesnes, Elliott, Gattis, and Blake is a pretty damn good team. So, you know, the issue then with that is that you need CB depth, you need a third CB, and, you know, another number 10. I mean, even if you had just paired Glesnes and Elliott and just replaced McKenzie with like a backup or like an academy guy or something like that, and it's still a pretty good team. They just need depth, you know, use the money for the reinforcements. Like, let's go, let's do it. You know, that's where I'm at. This one is from Union Hulk. He says, Kevin Dino, are you scared that the Union forgot we're in the Champions League and forget to sign new players that can help? Because Sugarman is cheap and the Academy bailed his stingy ass out last year. Also, why did Andy Bernard take over from Michael Scott on The Office? It's the same damn character. I don't know. I don't know how much of it is the pandemic. I don't know how much of it was the labor dispute. You know, is it just academy guys? Is this the world that we're living in? That's what I was saying to Marissa. You know, I mean, this was always the most exciting time of the year because it was like you'd come after the draft and then you'd finally get that, like, you know, Chaco or Roland Alberg kind of signing. We had the David Akam trade from a couple years ago. But now it's like Ernst Tanner has sucked the life out of the offseason. And I get it. I don't blame them. They don't think that the draft is worthwhile. Okay, so the draft means nothing. And you've taken that away from the fans. Now we don't look forward to the draft because they don't draft anybody. And you're going to say, well, we're just going to bring academy kids through. We're not going to make the big, you know, foreign splash. Okay, so then nobody really gets signed. I mean, it's, you know, they will make a foreign signing. I'm sure they'll bring in a number 10. But, yeah, it's stale. It's hard to like get people excited or get people interested when you have this approach to roster building. But I guess, like I said to Marissa, it is what it is, and we kind of just have to accept it and live with it. And look, if we have a boring off season, a couple boring off seasons in exchange for being a pretty damn good team and winning a lot of games, then we will take that any day of the week. Yaz is up next. He says, did you see the interview that Ernst did for the Italian paper? Yeah, it was an Italian website. What do you make of his no DP because of locker room chemistry take and any other thoughts on it in general? Yeah, first of all, it seemed like a really random place to do an interview, a random spot to do an interview, MLSsoccerItalia.com. I didn't even know that was a website. But it's a Q&A with Ernst Tanner on there. And the quote that Yaz is talking about, it's at the end of the article here. It says, this is the question. This is the way that the interviewer asked it. He said, let us dream a bit. What about signing an Italian DP? Did you have some contact in the past with some Italian players or an Italian footballer that you would love to sign if you can choose? And Ernst says, quote, we are not likely spending for DPs, but spending our money for the academy and development. It's also not easy to put a guy with multi-million dollar contract in the locker room with someone making 70K a year. There are a couple of interesting players in the Juventus U23, but right now we have problems with the foreigners since the pandemic started. The green card process almost stopped. And now that we lost two highly talented American players, it's difficult to replace them. So, God, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, first of all, with the DP and the chemistry thing, I mean, first of all, you have guy, you know, Jamiro's making a good amount of money versus some people who are making a good amount of money. You know, comparatively aren't making as much money. I don't see there being an issue there. Furthermore, you know, the days of, you know, the salary floors are higher now. So the days of David Beckham making $10 million or whatever and, you know, three of his teammates sharing a place in Manhattan Beach, those days are over. You know, if you read the Beckham experiment, Grant Wall goes into detail on that, how these guys are making like jack shit compared to Beckham. And so the disparity there was enormous, but I think that it's shrunk a little bit these days. Plus, I mean, those Galaxy teams, then when they had Beckham and Donovan and Robbie Keane were all making a ton of money, you know, Juninho and Sarvas and Todd Donovan and those guys, they weren't making a ton of money and they did just fine. They won a bunch of titles. So I don't know. I think that's overrated. I think everybody understands that that's what it is. That's the world we live in MLS. Maybe it's weird to Ernst, but I think the players would just be happy to have a contract, make it more money than we're making, and be on a winning team. That seems a little bit overblown, but I don't know. I'm not in a locker room. And then when he says there's problems with the foreigners, I guess is what he meant to say, since the pandemic started, the green card process almost stopped. So I don't know if that means, I would assume that would mean, it could mean both things. It could mean signing foreign players, new foreign players, and getting them over here, or getting green cards for the existing guys to clear up international slots and to move things along. So... you know, again, you got American guys to replace. It's not like, you know, Alberg is leaving and there goes an international slot. Then you sign an international to replace him. Like, you got two Americans to replace. You know, I'm trying to think. I don't have the green cards off the top of my head. I'm not sure who has one and who doesn't. But the guys who are not from the United States on the roster are Jack Elliott. I think he got his green card. He's been here a while. Glesnes doesn't have a green card. Brujo doesn't have a green card. Jamiro is foreign. Embiizo, Sergio Santos, Corey Burke. I mean, look at how long it took Corey to get it back into the country last year. Jesus, you know. Orovets, Kai Wagner. So, it's kind of a two-edged sword there. I don't know. You think it would get better with the Biden administration in charge? But, new president for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So it's hard to say, but yeah, that quote was, I don't know. There was a lot with that. That one kind of bothered me. I don't know. Just theoretically with $15 million, you got money to spend on everything. You could spend $1 million, $2 million on a number 10, and you'd still have a lot of money left to put into the academy and bringing kids through it. So Mike is checking in. He says the Open Cup is back, but it's condensed with fewer teams. Yeah. There's only eight MLS teams that qualify this year. Since this is another trophy, people will put an asterisk on the Union are locks to win it, right? So it's weird. So the so what they're going to do this year is they're going to do 8 USL teams, 4 open division teams, 2 USL League One teams, and 2 NISA teams. And that's the opening round. And then the 8 MLS teams come in at the round of 16. So, and as of now, they don't have a way to determine what teams they're going to be. So I don't know. Maybe you could do it, give it to teams that finish at the bottom of the table last year and give them something to play for, or do you do it for the teams at the top? Cause they have a chance to win it and go on and, you know, make the Champions League. I don't know. I have no idea how you do it. Doesn't make any sense. Imagine doing the FA Cup and saying, well, Manchester United is in it, but West Ham isn't. You know, it defeats the purpose, because the whole point of the U.S. Open Cup is that everybody can compete in it. I know it's a pandemic. I'm not really sure what you want, what you can do or what you want to do, but this is where we are. So the opening round is going to be it's going to be at the end of March, the 29th, and the 31st, and then the round of 16 is going to be at the end of April. So the MLS teams are going to come in the round after that, May 18th and 19th, and then the quarterfinals at the end of May, then they'll play the final at the end of June. So the quote from the commissioner is on the MLS website, and it says, as we look at our scheduling options, the Open Cup committee first prioritized the health and safety of the players and decided against scheduling matches in both March and April due to the ongoing circumstances with the pandemic. We also took into consideration the extended June FIFA window and the CONCACAF Gold Cup taking place through August 1st, along with the semifinal and final rounds of the Champions League being scheduled in the fall. So he's just saying that they felt the shortened version this year, quote, was the best format, and we're excited to have the opportunity to crown a champion after not being able to in 2020. So I don't know. I guess this is something is better than nothing. I guess that's what the philosophy is here. Silver Ray says, when are the Union going to be able to get a team of immigration labor lawyers on the staff full time? Tanner's complaining about not being able to get the guys he wants into the country. Burke took how long? Good point. Meanwhile, Gonzalo Higuain waltzes in. How does the Union get there? Yeah, I mean, this is crazy, isn't it? Think of the competitive advantage you can have by just having good connections with the right people. And this should not be on a team by team basis. Like, this should be the immigration, green card, visa, ITC, all that shit should be handled at the league level. You know, I mean, cause you're talking about competitive advantages and disadvantages based on whether you can get green cards for teams or not. You got preferential treatment for Gonzalo Higuain going flying to Mexico and then coming back and not having to do the protocol, you know? So it's just it's a mess, man. It's always been a mess, you know? Just find some slimy politician and get them on your side, and it's how you win soccer games and get the superstars in here, you know? Another question from Silver is, this year we see Tanner make a move for a player within MLS. I'm looking at BWP, Kevin Molino, moving to the Crew. You know, I'm thinking I would have been more than happy to have either of those guys coming off the bench for us in the CCL. Yeah, why not? Why not? I mean, you have enough academy guys coming through that you can pull in guys from other teams. It doesn't have to be a foreign dude. I would be just excited for like a Kevin Molino or a Bradley Wright Phillips type of trade versus having to go find some foreign guy. You don't have to go through the green card shit, right? You know, think about what it was like when the Akam trade happened. That was like the equivalent of bringing in a successful foreign guy. So I think we were all excited for that. The time didn't work out, but it felt similar in terms of you know, how big that move was. A Bev says Diego Costa is without a club. I vote that we combine the Brendan Bucks with the McKenzie Bucks to watch Diego shred MLS defenses for a year. Play the kids with a world class striker. Why not? Why not? Go get a striker. Go get a number 10. I feel like they just got to use the money at least like one good solid foreign player. It's not a waste. They're here for 2 years probably at the least. Maybe you get them for a third year. You know, an option year or something like that. I just can't, you know, you got two open DP slots, use them. If you're not, then what's the point? You know, use what you're given, you know, it's kind of like what Marissa and I were talking about. It's like, what's the next step? You know, what is the next step here? And you have expectations for the first time in a while. So it's not going to be the same going into it. You know, with nobody thinking that you're going to do anything. So we're expecting something to happen this offseason. Okay, this is good. This is from Pat in the Hat. He said, give me a basketball starting five using current and former Union players. So this is what I came up with. So they say that there's positionless basketball these days, but for the sake of the exercise, it wouldn't really work if we just picked five random dudes, right? So we'll go with the traditional starting five here. At point guard from Bosnia, standing at, I think he was like 6'1". I got to get Matt Cord in here to do the voice for me. I'm not that good. It's kind of late. I'm kind of tired. Harris Madunian is my point guard because he can sling the ball around, pass the ball around, set guys up. Oh, my God. He would have – how many assists would Harris Madunian have in a basketball game? Chris Paul level assists, 10 assists, 12 assists. Harris Madunian is my point guard. At shooting guard, Sebastian Latou, because doesn't have to play defense. Can just shoot and score, put the ball in the bucket, turning garbage into gold, as Mark Zumoff said on the last, he was on the last podcast. At small forward, you know, I'm kind of into the 3-and-D, you know, Robert Covington, Danny Green, Otto Porter Jr. kind of player. I think that if the Union had a glue guy, a defensive guy who can move the ball around and let the other guys kind of create around him. I think you put Brian Carroll at small forward. I think he's a good glue guy, a good 3-and-D, a wing player. At power forward, you need somebody who can stretch the floor, but somebody who's big and strong. It can get you some rebounds, and they're going to have to defend opposing power forward. So I've got Connor Casey playing the four on my team. And at center, you know, I'm going to go with the old school. You know, and you got unicorns like Joel Embiid and Jokic and Giannis Antetokounmpo, but I'm going to go with an old school kind of like a Shaquille O'Neal, like physical bruiser who can, you know, just do things around the rim up close and personal. And so my center is Danny Califf, So my starting five, my basketball starting five of current and former Union players is Harris Madunian at point guard. I've got Sebastian Latou at shooting guard. I've got my small forward is Brian Carroll, 3 and D. Connor Casey is my power forward, and at center, I've got Danny Califf. Walrus Poop, user at Walrus Poop 2, he said, can you talk about some of the newer homegrowns on the roster, play style, and how they've performed? I can't with any kind of education. I need to watch more on them. Maybe I can watch some film on them or dig into some old games or something like that, but that's a good topic for another time. Maybe I get Ralph back on here. And he talks about it, but we'll get back into it, you know, further down the road. But, yeah, I'm like you. I'm kind of itchy. I'm looking forward to the season starting again. I'd like to see a signing. I'm waiting. You know, I feel like the judge in Caddyshack, when he says, well, we're waiting, right? So we're waiting for a signing, waiting for something to happen. You know, in the meantime, hopefully you guys appreciated, you know, the couple podcasts we did. In the meantime, try to do some feature stuff, get some guests on here we haven't had, in the past. We are coming up, believe it or not, on the, 5-year anniversary of the podcast as well. So I wanted to mention that because what we started in 2016, Dave and I, so 2017, 18, 19, 20, 21. Yes. I think the summer, this coming summer will be the 5th year anniversary of the pod. We will have 125 episodes by that point. Definitely. We might get to 150 this year. So maybe, you know, if we can all get this vaccine and get back down to the stadium, we could do a, you know, a 5th anniversary party or something like that and combine it with another charity event. I'd love to do another charity thing, maybe like once a year or something. So I don't know if you got any ideas, get at me. We're looking forward to it. The future is bright, right? We're going to stop shoveling snow. Carson Wentz will either be here or he won't be here, and that'll be solved. The shitty weather will be over. It'll be summer. Hopefully we'll get everybody vaccinated. We'll get things back to normal. We'll drink some beers and watch some soccer and figure out a way to, you know, celebrate 5 years of the podcast or something. So let me know what you think about that. In the meantime, you know, do me a favor. And if you listen on iTunes or whatever, go to Apple Podcasts and drop us a, try to get as many 5-star reviews as we can in here. I got a couple of 4 stars because people didn't like my IPA dislike, so I apologize for that. I don't know if the 5 stars really help us do anything. Maybe it makes us look better. But I realize I've never asked for that before, so I humbly ask you to do that for me. And yeah, onward and upward, looking for a signing, schedule, something tangible, something meaty that we can talk about. And you know, until then, it's always soccer in Philadelphia.